from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, coming to you live tonight from the Republican National Convention at Madison Square Garden in New York City, where the GOP faithful have gathered this week in Manhattan. Along with thousands of press and protesters and a boatload of police, we are in the thick of it all. Big-name GOP moderates John McCain and Rudy Giuliani will headline the speaker's lineup tonight. In this hour, House Speaker Dennis Hastert will address the hall, and we will bring you that, along with live reports and up-to-the-minute developments from the convention floor, plus a closer look at the protesters in New York. And with all that, we're going to be taking a hard look this hour at exactly how the Republicans plan to make their case for the Bush-Cheney re-election this week on the economy, Iraq, homeland security, and more. Tonight on Point, the Republican Party makes its case. Where do you see the Bush strong suit? Where is this Republican vulnerable? What do you need to hear from the GOP this week? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And from Madison Square Garden, we check in first with Audie Cornish, reporter for WBUR, who's been out speaking with delegates all day around New York. Hi, Audie. Good to have you back from the hinterlands with us here in Manhattan.
Hi, Tom.
So what do you hear out there? What do the delegates want to hear this week? What do they think the party needs to accomplish this week, Audie?
I think what I heard most of all was that the party needs to set the record straight on the president's record. A lot of these delegates thought that they have to deal with a lot of Bush bashing, that they have to explain to people that, yes, he's done good things as president. And they want to be able, they want the president and they want the party to showcase his record and his accomplishments. And a lot of them pointed to the fact that in Boston with the Democratic Party, it was all about showcasing John Kerry and who John Kerry was as a person. And they didn't think that the Democrats talked a lot about issues there. And they think that this week the Republicans will be able to set the tone for the rest of the election by talking about the president's record in the economy and his record dealing with terrorism and homeland security. Those two we heard over and over again.
They're feeling they can get maybe break through the media filter this week and have more direct access during prime time when they're on the podium speaking directly to the American public.
Exactly. They say they want him for another 4 years. They want him to finish the job because he's proven that he can do it. That is the argument that they're saying, and they don't think that message is necessarily getting out.
And did you have a sense of optimism among the delegates, confidence, fear at how close this race is running, Audie?
I heard no fear. I heard absolute optimism. I mean, the delegates I spoke to made it very clear that they feel that the president has proven himself on issues that they think the American people are most concerned about. Again, terrorism, and again, the economy. And so their idea is that in order for them to go home and fight it out with swing voters and independent voters, they want to be able to say, look at what he's done and really think about what he's accomplished despite the different obstacles that have happened during his term in terms of maybe corporate scandals or just war or the terrorist attacks. They think that he has done above and beyond, you know, what was expected and what was even people could have imagined 4 years ago.
So they're feeling good, and they're hoping that this week gets that picture out to the American public. Audie Cornish will be with us all week on the convention floor talking to delegates and everybody else around New York. Audie, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
We are looking at the Republican case tonight, the case they're going to be making in New York this week and around the country all through this fall. I'm joined this hour by John Harwood. Good to have you, John.
Great to be here.
National political editor with the Wall Street Journal. We're going to hear in just a moment from Ken Melman, but quick thought, John, on how you're hearing the Republicans setting up this week's message so far.
Well, there are a couple things that are going to happen. One is they're going to draw sharp contrasts with John Kerry, and you're going to see that tonight when Rudy Giuliani steps on the podium. He's going very hard after John Kerry, saying he's somebody who flip-flops. He has a line in the speech that they've released, the advanced remarks, saying maybe that's why John Edwards talks about two Americas, one where John Kerry takes one position, one where he takes the other position. So that's very tough. They want to draw that contrast and try to remind the American people that one candidate for president is a strong, decisive leader, and the other one is someone who vacillates. The second thing they want to do is try to lay out a domestic agenda for George Bush in the second term. 63% of the American people in our Wall Street Journal NBC poll last week said the president had not articulated clear goals for a second term. They don't know what he's going to do. And they also, as Audie just said, and this is important, want to remind people of what George Bush has actually done as president. This has been a rough year for this White House. They've had big problems in Iraq, turbulence in the economy, and they want to come out here and say, look, this is a president who passed an education reform bill. His numbers on education are pretty good.
Right.
Somebody who finally, after lots of talk, brought about a prescription drug bill under Medicare, changed Medicare, passed tax cuts to try to keep the recession shallower than it might otherwise would have been, and fought wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. They think that's a powerful case that can help George Bush get another audience with the American people.
John Harwood, let's get that straight from the horse's mouth. This afternoon, I sat down here in Madison Square Garden with Ken Mellman. He is chair of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign. I asked Ken Mellman if the president can run on his economic record.
I think he not only has the record, he has the plan going forward. In terms of delivering, let's remember, in the 3 months after the attacks of September 11th, we lost 1 million jobs in this country. In the past 11 months, we've created 1.5 million jobs.
But 2001 to 2003, almost 10 million lost. 4.4 million of those got full-time jobs back, 52% at lower wages than they had before.
Well, as I said, a million jobs were lost in just the 6 months after 9/11.
Yeah.
That had a very bad impact on our country. Combine that with the corporate scandals. Combine that with the challenges we faced in terms of an economy that was in recession when he headed into office. All those things had to be turned around. They have been turned around. But here's the fundamental question. Every election is a choice. John Kerry has said, going forward, that if he's elected, he will raise taxes. The amount he says he'll raise taxes is $900 billion. How do we get that number? He says he will raise taxes to pay for his health care plan. Experts have said his health care plan costs $900 billion.
He says he'll do it on high-income families.
Well, here's the question. Two out of three of the people he's referring to as high-income families are either owners or investors in small businesses. They create three out of four jobs in this country. And the fundamental question is this. The reason we've had this job loss over the last, in addition to 9/11, is we now face new global economic competition. And in a world of global economic competition, when it's just as easy to locate a factory in Lima, Peru, as it is in Lima, Ohio, our president believes that you need to reduce taxes, reduce lawsuits, and reduce red tape, because taxes and lawsuits and red tape make it more expensive to hire American workers and less competitive.
John Kerry has
a record of being for higher taxes, for more lawsuits, and for more red tape.
If that's the way, why hasn't it produced the job surge yet? You know that they haven't come at the pace you'd like. I mean, by your own expectations and numbers.
Certainly, while the economy is good, there's more we would like to do. I think that the reason it hasn't is we faced a very unique series of challenges. We faced a terrorist attack, 1 million jobs lost in the first 3 months. We faced corporate scandal. We faced a recession. And we need to reform government. The president's not saying, I'm satisfied with the status quo, vote for me. He's saying, I have a plan for change, vote for me.
Let's turn to security for a moment. And Iraq, front and center there, it's been called the central battleground in the war on terror. Can the president run effectively on the Iraq war as an accomplishment?
Well, I think what the president can run on as an accomplishment is the fact that the American people are safer today than they were on the 10th of September, 2001. That here in New York, we are a front in the war on terror. But we're safer because we've taken the battle of the terrorists in Kabul and in Baghdad. What we faced in Iraq is this. We faced a war that ended much more quickly and much more successfully from a military perspective than we thought it would.
If you can say it's ended. I mean, it's not ended. American troops are still dying in significant numbers. We had tanks in the streets of Najaf two days ago, heavy bombing in Fallujah.
But here's what happened. In the 1991 Gulf War, there were certain things we faced. We faced oil fields that were set on fire. We worried about the use of chemical weapons. We worried about dams being breached. All of these were things we expected to happen and we planned for and we avoided. But because, from a military perspective, the Iraqi army surrendered as quickly as it did, we had other challenges that the quick military victory precluded us from being able to predict as much as we would like to have predicted.
Well, and
so, look, war is hard. And anybody that would say to you, easy, clean operation, I think, is being unrealistic.
Yeah, but we can't go back to Rumsfeld saying, you know, look, it's a messy business. I mean, high officials in the Bush administration have conceded that the plan for the post-war stability and reconstruction was not well laid out, didn't fit the circumstances, as you say, that we're actually confronted
with. Well, I think what they would say is that they put together a lot of contingencies. They dealt with a large number of the contingencies. Some of the contingencies that we thought about occurred, others did not. And the result has been certainly some difficulty.
What is George Bush's strategy on Iraq then for the next 4 years?
Well, our strategy on Iraq, obviously, is to provide the military support we need at the direction of the Iraqi officials to be able to ensure that their sovereignty, our troops to stay as long as they need to, but not a day more. But again, there's a big choice there. George Bush and John Kerry both voted to send our troops to Iraq. Both voted in favor of the war. Both thought Saddam Hussein was a threat. What was the difference? The difference was that when it came to providing our troops the body armor and the equipment and the ammunition they needed to win the war, George Bush said yes. John Kerry said no, even though he had voted for the troops to go over there.
Well, of course, you know, he says it wasn't put forward the way he thought it should be done. It wasn't structured the way it should be structured.
The troops in Iraq, on the front lines of Iraq, they found things they couldn't expect. All troops find things that are not put forward the way they expect. The fundamental question is, do you believe that as commander-in-chief, you want a commander-in-chief that supports our troops unequivocally when they're in harm's way, or one that looks for reasons not to?
That was Ken Mellman, chair of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign, speaking with me just a couple of hours ago today. In the background now, on the convention floor, you can hear delegates from the different state delegations beginning to announce their votes for the nomination of George Bush. This will go on at the Republican convention differently than at the Democrat. This will go on for a couple of days before the formal nomination is announced. I'm joined in Madison Square Garden tonight by John Harwood, national political editor, with the Wall Street Journal. John, you just heard it there from Ken Mellman, just about as high as you can get in the Bush campaign. We read now one of the crew that breakfasts with Karl Rove over eggs and bacon and lays out strategy. Your response to what you're hearing, this is Ken Mellman setting up the convention week. Is he spinning the story straight?
Well, he's spinning the president's story, just like the John Kerry's aide spun his story in Boston. Ken Mellman's a very smart guy, very good political tactician, strategist, and he is trying to lay out a set of choices in a way that's advantageous to Bush. A couple of things about his remarks. He talked about the election turning on whether the American people feel like they're more safe or not than September the 10th. It's not at all clear what the verdict is on that. In our Wall Street Journal NBC poll last week, 27% of the people, more than one in four, said they feel less safe than before the September 11th attack. That number had spiked up since our poll a month earlier. So the difficulties in Iraq that have arisen, the fear that people are experiencing as a result of the threat of terrorism, the continuing sort of alert status that hangs over American life right now, it's not clear exactly how that's going to play out. The Bush campaign believes that they're going to come out on top, and he still gets good marks for leading the war on terrorism, but it's a more complicated picture, I think.
And what about, you've heard also not just a positioning of the Bush campaign, but a positioning of the Kerry campaign, of course, and how they see it, how they would like people to see it. Calling Kerry someone who will raise taxes. And always it's presented as a tax hike on higher-income households is a wound to small business and therefore to the base of the pyramid of the American economy. Here he said two out of three of these families that Kerry would raise taxes on, that's $200,000 income plus, are owners or investors of small business. You're a Wall Street Journal guy. Does that sound true to you?
Well, I thought the key phrase there was, or investors in businesses. A lot of people own stock. Half the people in America own stock in one way or the other through their 401k plans, their retirement plans, or their individual holdings. And I'm not sure that how good a marker that is for what people's attitudes are going to be on tax cuts. George Bush's tax cuts have never been all that popular. And if you ask the American people right now, do they want to roll back taxes on people earning over $200,000 to use money for other national purposes, most polls will show you a majority are in favor of that. So John Kerry's position on taxes is an advantage to him with significant chunks of the American electorate. Campaign conversations can change that, but John Kerry is not nearly in so much of a hole as Ken's remarks might suggest.
John, you've been watching this Bush campaign. We've got a break coming up. We can hear the action on the floor. More delegations delivering their votes for George Bush and Dick Cheney. We're covering the Republican National Convention live from Madison Square Garden. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. And the action rolls on. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, joining you tonight live from Madison Square Garden in New York City. And tonight we are hearing how the GOP plans to make its home stretch case for a Bush-Cheney re-election. You can join our conversation tonight. Where do you see President Bush's strong suit? Where is he weak? Can the president credibly run on the strength of the U.S. economy? Or is that a problem for him? What about the war on terror? Is that a winning issue for George Bush? What about the war in Iraq? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by John Harwood, national political editor for The Wall Street Journal. And we are joined as well now in Madison Square Garden by Stephen Hayes. He's a staff writer at the Weekly Standard, the conservative Weekly Standard, author of The Connection, How Al-Qaeda's Collaboration with Saddam Hussein Has Endangered America. Stephen Hayes, thanks so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Good to be with you.
And a lot of callers want to join us tonight. Let's turn to them. Harry is calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. Hi, Harry. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. I appreciate this very much. You're not going to find too many people like me listening to this NPR station tonight. I love it. Don't get me wrong. I'm a 59-year-old Southern white heterosexual male and pretty much reviled across the country by NPR listeners. But I love
come on.
It.
We're happy to have you. But what do you think makes you so unique tonight, Harry?
Well, I love NPR. My two favorite things, I love radio over TV, but I listen to NPR all the time.
Okay.
I love Prairie Home Companion, and I also listen to Rush Limbaugh most days.
Ah, so you're the rare Rush Limbaugh crossover man.
I'm so weird. I even confuse myself sometimes.
And what are you thinking about the positions that the Republicans are putting up this week? The message, Harry.
Well, the main thing that offends me is that they want to deny rights to a big segment of our population, and that is the gays, and putting as part of their plank, denying these people the rights of other American citizens. It just chaps me.
So not only in the platform we see today, not only that they would not be permitted traditional marriage, but also that domestic partnership benefits would be disallowed.
Yeah, I can't stand that. It makes me so angry that this time I've just got to vote for, I like John Edwards better than Kerry, but I'm going to vote for Kerry Edwards unless they do a 180 on me here tonight and change their mind about gays and lesbian rights. If Cheney were to decide he didn't want to run and John McCain were to run for VP, I'd have to think twice about that, too. I like that a lot.
There may be some big news this week, but I don't think it's going to be that big. But, Harry, we've got your unique position there from Greensboro. We thank you for calling in tonight. America gets pretty complicated sometimes, Stephen Hayes. We've got the Rush Limbaugh NPR crossover voter, white heterosexual Southern male who's standing up for gay rights. We've got it all going on. That's the big tent in one household.
He sounds like me, except that I'm not from the South. I think the caller raises an interesting point, although I found it interesting that he's doesn't like Dick Cheney, even though Dick Cheney in the past week has expressed a more moderate position than his boss.
Saying his daughter is gay,
right.
All people should have freedoms of the American
society. Exactly,
system.
And it's sort of a more libertarian approach to the issue of gay marriage. And I think that there's a split in the Republican Party. It's fair for the caller to note that split. I think there's a pitched battle going on in a certain respect. The log cabin Republicans are going up on the air with an ad today, talking about this question of gay marriage.
These are gay Republicans who are kind of bolting from the Bush flank this week.
Or threatening to, in any case. Yeah.
Stephen Hayes, we're looking at how the GOP plans to make its case this week and in the weeks ahead. Is it steady as she goes? Do you anticipate it's going to be the same kind of thing we've heard throughout the spring and summer? Or do we have a recalibration that this convention week will kick off?
No, I think it will be pretty much steady as it goes. I don't think that there will be a calibration. I think we'll hear some more moderate voices, as is typical of most political conventions, of course. I do think we'll hear steady as it goes. I mean, I think we're going to hear a lot about President Bush being a strong leader, you know, echoing some of the things that we heard at the Democratic convention. And they'll be making their cases. There'll be a vigorous defense of the war on terror, I'm told, in President Bush's speech on Thursday night, as well as a fairly specific plan for the second term, if there were to be one. My understanding is that the speechwriters have been working long and hard to present a detailed agenda for President Bush to try to contrast him with John Kerry in his speech, which was much more thematic and much more biographical.
Tom, could I add, Kentucky-born white guy who also heterosexual white guy who also likes NPR, there is a split in the Republican Party on issues like gay marriage, but it's not much of a split.
Yeah.
Just as in the Democratic Party, social liberals are the ones driving the train, social conservatives are driving the train in this party, so the splinter groups on either side are fairly small.
Let's go to the podium for just a minute, where House Speaker Dennis Hastert is at the microphone.
It is the intention to resume the roll call of the states during the third session, beginning with New Jersey. We will now proceed with the order of business as printed in the official program.
May
I have your attention, please? Would all delegates please take their seats?
Would delegates not a moment of scintillating rhetoric here. Dennis Hastert has come to the podium to clear the aisles and get the program underway again.
We'll come back. It's no accident that Denny Hastert's not speaking in prime time.
I guess not. He's glowering at his crowd of fellow Republicans, asking for order. We'll come back if he begins to kick up his heels at the podium there. John Harwood, let me put the same question to you. Do you see, hear, expect a mid-course correction of any kind? The Republicans have an opportunity this week, if they choose, to put a different face on their campaign rhetoric and what they're highlighting. Do you expect it?
I don't. And I don't think the record of the last 4 years gives one much reason to expect one. One of the things we've learned about George W. Bush, and it was not commonly appreciated when he ran in 2000, what a thoroughgoing conservative he actually is. There was talk about him running to the middle in 2000. I don't actually think he did that. He showcased his personality. He spoke in ways that suggested that he could work across the aisle, that he had a good regard for people that he'd be serving with in Washington. But he's a conservative, and he's proved it in this first term, and I think there's no reason to expect differently in a second term. When you look at what components of a second-term Bush agenda might be, I think the thing he believes in most strongly on the domestic front is an overhaul of the Social Security system to bring about partial privatization. That is a conservative goal. It is, some might call it divisive, but it's something, you know, when George Bush believes in an idea, he's shown the capacity to stick with it despite a lot of criticism. That gets him in trouble sometimes. And certainly he took a risk on the Iraq War, and he's paying a price for it right now. That's a drag on his reelection. But I don't think we're going to see the president decide that, well, my polls aren't very good, I'm going to do something different. I think he was elected to do certain things, and he's pretty bullheaded about them.
Let's look right on down the list at these issues. Stephen Hayes, on the economy. Ken Melman and the Republicans are saying this week President Bush is a turnaround artist. He inherited a terrible situation. He's got it back on the rails. Do you think that sells?
Well, I don't know if it sells, because I think there are still some people in key parts of the country, particularly some of the battleground states. Like
Ohio, President Bush himself acknowledging this week it hasn't the recovery hasn't necessarily come to you, my dear Ohio.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, I think for some people that will not be a message that they're eager to hear or eager to believe. On the other hand, I do think that, you know, when you take a step back and you look at everything that the country went through, you know, people do have this sense of, you know, having come through September 11th, starting out in a recession, and sort of working our way back. And I do think people, you know, it's I think, common in Washington to sort of mock the tax cuts. I think a lot of the talking head class doesn't like the tax cuts. I think people really feel the tax cuts. I spent 2 weeks in Wisconsin, interviewing people throughout the state and talking to them about sort of the issues that matter most to them. And tax cuts were really among the first things that people said.
Pocketbook impact that people you perceived are very aware of.
Absolutely.
What about Iraq? Huge, you know, trouble out there. We're reading, my gosh, the reports are reading this week in western Iraq of whole areas not under U.S. control, American soldiers kind of hiding out in their forts, the government officials associated with the new government and by that with the Americans being kidnapped, killed, humiliated, resigning. Can the president turn Iraq into a positive this week, in the weeks ahead?
You know, I think he can. I don't think he will. I think one of the things that I would like to hear from the president this week and from other Republicans this week is a strong, sort of vigorous defense of Iraq, of the war there, making the case that Iraq is part of the war on terrorism. The administration, I think, one could fault the administration for making the argument, making the assertion that Iraq is a part of the war on terrorism, but we haven't heard the why Iraq is a part of the war on terrorism. I think that would be helpful this week to hear some of that. I don't expect that we probably will. But I do think you're right to ask about whether the support of the president and his policy, particularly among Republicans, is soft, and I think that it is.
Let's hear a bit more from Dennis Hastert at the podium on the convention floor.
These are the job killers. They add cost to our products and put American workers at a disadvantage. But you know, John Kerry doesn't see it that way, folks. No, it is Boston Tax Party. John Kerry promised to increase taxes on the job creators. Instead of throwing tea in the Boston Harbor, John Kerry wants to throw the taxpayers overboard. Both President Lincoln and President Reagan understood that in order to be respected around the world, you have to have the courage to stand up for America. George W. Bush shares the Lincoln and the Reagan vision. Does anybody really know where John Kerry stands on the war? You know, he's voted for it, and he's voted against it. My friends, this is no time to pick a leader who is weak on the war and wrong on taxes.
There's Dennis Hastert at the podium going after John Kerry, putting George Bush in the lineage of Abraham Lincoln, Ronald Reagan, and soon to be on Mount Rushmore, no doubt. John Harwood, here's the tax issue again with John Kerry, which in the Democratic playbook anyway, and in some Republicans, comes around to the deficit question. Where do we stand on that? Do the Republicans have a message on the deficit that can credibly sell?
You know, I think the deficit as an issue is fairly secondary. If you ask Americans which party you prefer on tax policy and the deficit, they might, and some of our polls have shown this, give a slight advantage to the Democrats. But I don't think the deficit itself is going to drive policy. Democratic strategists are concerned that taxes, for the reason that Stephen found when he talked to people in Wisconsin, are the biggest domestic vulnerability for John Kerry. Health care is a big advantage for the Democrats. George Bush is deep in the hole on that. But you're seeing a consistent refrain from speakers at the podium talking about John Kerry wanting to raise your taxes. That is a fairly simple argument, but the repetition of it could be effective. And there are some people who like tax cuts. It's not a strong majority in the electorate who think these tax cuts were a good thing. And John Kerry, if he can frame the argument properly, can certainly make some headway on that issue. But it's something they've got to work.
Gary's calling from Kinley, North Carolina. Hi, Gary. You're on the air.
Hi there. How you doing?
Just great, Gary. Good to have you. What's on your mind?
You just covered the subject that I was concerned about, was the deficit and taxes. I am an owner-operator of my small business, and I don't think 4 years is enough to give the tax cuts that Bush out there enough time. You know, it takes a good decade or longer to figure out which way things are going. I mean, you listen to Greenspan, And it's 1 year is one thing, 1 year is another. Bush hasn't had enough time. I do believe the tax cuts are a gamble. We don't know which way they're going to go. The economy needs to pick up, which I think it's on the rebound myself. At least I've been doing better.
Gary, let me ask you, are you concerned, Gary, about the deficit related to those tax cuts or not?
I'm concerned about the deficit, but I do believe we have time to figure out which way we need to go. And if you don't give tax cuts enough time, you're not going to realize which way you need to go. It always can be changed, I believe. Why try something for this short amount of time and then say, oh, no, that's not right? Well, I don't think it's enough time.
A little more time. Gary, thanks for calling in. We'll look at that. Vice President Dick Cheney and his wife Lynn Cheney have arrived on the convention floor. There is some clapping and grooving going on to the band in the bandstand there. Stephen Hayes.
I don't see Cheney dancing yet.
No, I don't see Cheney. He looks pretty comfortable in his seat there, but he looks well tanned and rested, I must say. Looks like he's lost a couple of pounds. Stephen Hayes, what about this issue of the tax cuts? Here, our caller Gary says, give them more time. On the other hand, you hear a number of economists saying the bump that the economy got from the tax cuts maybe finished already, and we still don't see the job creation. There's some concern out there about that. Do the tax cuts need more time, or have they already played their role?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that the president wants to do, or is talking about doing, is making them permanent. And I think he's getting some pressure from within the Republican Party, not enough for my taste, for a broader plan for tax reform, for income tax reform, you know, whether that's
is this the national sales tax that he brought up?
Going back to the national sales tax, going back to a flat tax, some discussion of broader tax reform is something that really we haven't heard past the lips of many in the Bush administration.
John Harwood, is it adding up on the tax cut side? Can Bush, have they played their role already? Can they push the economy up any further? If they're made permanent, does that make the deficit worse, or does it make the economy better?
I think economists think there's plenty of stimulus in the economy. The tax cuts have probably already had their effect in terms of making the recession somewhat more shallow. I think Bush has got a couple of problems on taxes or issues to deal with on taxes. First of all, you mentioned the deficit. People don't vote on the deficit all that much. It's fairly abstract. But the deficit is an obstacle to what the president really does want to do, which is reform the Social Security system. If you go to private accounts, as he wants to do, there are huge transition costs. Mm-hmm. You can borrow a lot of that money, but there gets to be a limit as
when
to how much money.
Exactly.
There gets to be
on.
A limit as to how much you can borrow. The second thing is the president is interested in some sort of overhaul of the tax structure. We don't know what form that's going to take. He sort of stepped in it a week or so ago when he indicated that he was open to looking at a national sales tax, and the Democrats pounced and the White House said, no, we're not thinking about that. But if you do want to do something to broaden the base of the tax system, perhaps remove loopholes, lower rates, that goes against the thrust of the tax cuts he's done so far, things like the child tax credit and that sort of thing. You can make the code simpler and rates smaller, but you've got to do away with some things he's already done so far.
John Harwood with the Wall Street Journal, Stephen Hayes with the Weekly Standard. Please stand by. We are live at the Republican National Convention in Madison Square Garden in New York City. In a moment, we will get a report on the protesters who have been in the streets, hundreds of thousands of them yesterday. You can join our conversation tonight. We're looking at the GOP plan. How they will make their case in this convention. Are you sold by the slogan? We're hearing it rolled out today, safer world, more hopeful America. The Republican and Democrat descriptions of that world are so different. How do you decide? How do you choose? 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, broadcasting live tonight from Madison Square Garden in New York City, where the Republicans have assembled for their national convention that will nominate George Bush and Dick Cheney. President Bush will get to New York on Wednesday, we're told. He will make his first appearance and speech on Thursday night. We've got a big lineup tonight. Later on, Rudy Giuliani, John McCain. Tomorrow, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Dick Cheney, Laura Bush, and a whole lot more. We are looking tonight at how the GOP plans how the party's going to make its case in the home stretch for the Bush-Cheney reelection. I've been joined by John Harwood of the Wall Street Journal and Stephen Hayes of the Weekly Standard. But another big factor that has emerged this week and may still play a major role in this convention week have been protests. There was an enormous protest in New York City yesterday, the biggest in decades, perhaps the biggest in history, in or around a party convention in this country. Let's listen to a few sounds of what took place around New York.
I'm here to protest the war. I'm against the war totally. We wouldn't have this war if it wasn't for George Bush and his neoconservatives. And I don't care, you know, who's running or what else is going on in the world. This is the place to be today.
There's a lot of different factions. It's united against the Bush agenda. You got people who are really far left, people who are somewhat far left, you know, and then you got people like me who are just not really into the Bush administration who'd like to see someone who can change things.
Protest sounds from the streets of New York. Yesterday was huge, vast boulevards full of protesters as far as the eye could see. We saw them go by for hours and hours, maybe 5 or 6 hours, without cease. Lots of New York police on horseback and snipers on the rooftops and battalion after battalion of scooter police and bicycle police. Meghna Chakrabarty is with the On Point staff. She's been following protests around New York City and joins me now. Meghna, what's the follow-up been today? What was the protest profile today?
Well, a pulse of energy, of political energy, surged through New York yesterday, and it's still reverberating across the city today. While there were hundreds of thousands of people on the street yesterday, today we had thousands. Yesterday's protest was in large part a giant umbrella protest to say no to the Bush agenda. Today, there were specific protests targeting specific issues such as health care, Bush's foreign policy, and the economy. For example, there was a homeless and HIV/AIDS march that started from near the United Nations and marched all the way to as close to Madison Square Garden as police would allow. There were also specific what they call protest actions. They targeted hotels in which delegates were staying at and corporation headquarters around Manhattan. For example, several protesters showed up at the Plaza Hotel just outside of Central Park wearing wild pink wigs and holding plastic glasses of champagnes and greeting delegates as they left the hotel saying, "Here's cheers to tax cuts and the rich." So we had a lot of small little actions around town today.
I've seen a lot of that, the sort of interaction between protesters and delegates in Times Square and around the city. A lot of street theater going on in New York, and a lot of it aimed, whenever they're able to, at the delegates themselves.
Yeah, most of the delegates I've seen have been actually taking it in good stride. One delegate was taking pictures of the protesters as they were waiting for them outside of the Plaza Hotel. So thus far, it seems that the idea that this is going to be a week of peaceful but also politically charged protest seems to be holding true.
So far, we'll see what happens tomorrow. There are more significant protests planned tomorrow. You were in the streets yesterday with this sea of protesters, Meghna. What did you see? What kind of people? Who was out there?
Well, there was a variety of people. Now, remember, originally the New York Police Department estimated the numbers at 125,000. United for Peace and Justice, the group that sponsored this protest, said the number was more around 500,000. And sources in contact with the NYPD command center today were reporting the New York Times as saying the number was indeed at least 400,000. That does make it the largest political protest at an American convention in history.
I have to say, looking down those streets, I would tend to believe the larger numbers.
Yeah, two miles worth of protesters. Now, I saw a whole myriad of people there, everywhere from young families with children to babies on strollers, a group of suburban moms from New Jersey, which is interesting because they were showing a sign that said "Suburban Moms Against Bush," and there was a lot of concern for the vote of security moms in this election, 9/11 families, a group representing New York City taxi drivers, anarchists in black masks, black ski masks. Mm-hmm. They did indeed cause a little bit of a skirmish right in front of Madison Square Garden around 3 o'clock. And also I ran into an impeccably dressed octogenarian from Long Island who was wearing a yellow sticker that says, "Bush lies, who dies." So there was a variety out there.
Some of the protesters you met had very personal reasons for being there.
Yeah, one of the protesters I met was a woman named Celeste Zapala from Philadelphia. She is the mother of the late Sergeant Sherwood Baker. And Sherwood Baker, Sergeant Baker, was killed in April in Iraq. And she was holding a picture of her son. And underneath the picture were the words written "In Memoriam." And as I walked with her, she told me a little bit more about Sergeant Baker.
He was 30 years old. He was in the Pennsylvania National Guard. He was killed on April 26th in Baghdad. He was part of a security detail guarding the people who were looking for the weapons of mass destruction. He is, in my mind, the finest of America, the very finest of America. And he's gone. And I swore at his funeral that I will not be quiet. I will try to speak the truth in every way, every place I can. This war is based on lies. It is wrong. We have to do everything we possibly can to stop it, not just for my family, not just for this country, but for the whole world.
Protester Celeste Zapala, whose son died in Iraq in April. That is wrenching to hear, Meghna. A peaceful protest yesterday. You've spoken with protest organizers. Were they happy with that? Do they feel they're getting their message across even without the drama of violence or destruction?
They were extraordinarily happy. The numbers, it seems, were double of what they expected. And the fact that it was peaceful for the protest organizers showed that the passion and the seriousness with which people from all across the country came to New York City runs deeper and more true than the trouble that a group of anarchists may have otherwise would rather have shown.
Meghna Chakrabarty, On Point producer, out in the streets with protesters over these last couple of days. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks, Tom.
John Harwood, what do you make of the protest factor this week? It was a very big protest yesterday. There's been all kinds of speculation about how it might factor in. Is it a significant factor at this point?
I don't think so, actually, Tom. I think it's a marginal factor. One thing the protests do is conventions are not all that exciting these days. So conventions provide something that is not part of the script for people in the media to cover. If protests turn violent, that would certainly be harmful to the side that the protesters are advocating by presenting to the American people a not a very flattering picture. Republicans are certainly poised to take advantage of that if, in fact, that happens. But it doesn't appear that it is. Rather than being an independent political influence on its own, I do think it's an indication of the extent to which people are mobilized on both sides, and it's not surprising that you could get large numbers of people to New York City. This is a very democratic state, and you have a very democratic city, that is, and you have a very mobilized democratic base that's eager to stand up and say, we want to get rid of George Bush.
Voted 5-1 for Al Gore in the year 2000. I want to welcome to our table now in Madison Square Garden Senator Gordon Smith, Republican Senator for Oregon. Senator Smith, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
There's a lot we want to ask you about, but what about those protests we just heard about first? You must have seen them yesterday. If you were in town, you could not miss them. You're an American looking out at a sea of protesters at your party's convention. What do you make of it?
Well, I think to the credit of the protesters, they are being peaceful. I hope they remain that way. They're exercising their First Amendment right to speech. And the New York Police Department is doing a fabulous job with security. So in my mind, you're seeing the best features of American campaigns, lots of a marketplace of ideas, real loud and a little unruly, but not violent. And hopefully it'll remain that way, because I think that does credit to our whole system.
And what about the substance of what we're despite the restraint exhibited yesterday, a lot of really harsh critiques of the Bush administration. You saw them in the signs, the chants, any conversation you have with the protesters. Do you credit those? Do you take them on board, or is it really not relevant to the way you're thinking?
No, I mean, look, that's what campaigns are about, are answering the charges that are made. Incumbent presidents have been doing that since the beginning, the founding of our republic. I thought it was almost sad that one group today started their protest against poverty at the United Nations.
Sad because?
Because the United Nations has been manifestly unsuccessful in combating poverty and in stopping genocide. In fact, is very much complicit in the whole food for oil program,
which had fraud woven
and,
through
and,
it.
And so the UN is complicit in the impoverishment and even the genocide committed against the Iraqi people. And that's sad, but nonetheless true. But there's this false hope placed in that institution that somehow that's the answer to the world's problems. I think our history would suggest otherwise.
Senator Smith, we've been looking tonight with John Harwood and Stephen Hayes at the plans the Republicans have for rolling out their campaign agenda this week for the rest of the campaign. You're in Oregon, a kind of swing state that's been swinging, if the polls, if I've got the polls right, a little bluer, a little more toward Kerry in recent weeks. What do you think is going to make the difference in your state?
Well, Republicans never poll well in Oregon in August. But George Bush nearly
because they're
won
all
the
at their beach houses.
It's for a lot of reasons. I can't fully explain it.
Okay.
But I just my own experience tells me that you don't take a poll in August and have any sense that that's what the result will be in November. George Bush nearly won Oregon last time. And I think Oregonians are fair-minded people and have not yet married John Kerry, nor have they divorced George Bush. They're open to this campaign, and both campaigns are very vigorous there.
What do you think would push Oregon more to the Bush side of the ledger this week?
Well, I think that what I have seen in my public life is we spent the 90s dismantling the industries that built our state, farming, fishing, and forestry, and ranching. Bill Clinton and Al Gore darn well shut those things down in our state. We relied upon the Silicon Forest, the high-tech stuff. That all exploded. 9/11 destroyed our tourism. So we had nothing to fall back on. We have been hard hit as a state. However, George Bush has defended our hydroelectric dams. He's passed the Healthy Forest Initiative. He's cut taxes. Oregon's economy is growing again.
But you've still got one of the highest unemployment rates in the country.
Yes, but it is falling, and it needs to fall farther. But it's been much, much higher in earlier elections. And the truth of the matter is George Bush, whether it's trade, forestry, farming, fishing, he's made a very real difference for Oregon. And Oregon they don't like taxes. He's cut them. John Kerry would raise them.
Senator Gordon Smith from Oregon, thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
John Harwood, I see you responding to the senator there.
Well, I just wanted to say, am I allowed to ask the senator
a question? Oh, sure. He's right here.
Senator, do you think it would be good for the president in Oregon and nationally, good for the Republican Party this fall to have a loud, vigorous, detailed debate about the partial privatization of Social Security, which is one of the things that I think the president's considering for a second-term agenda?
Well, I think Oregonians are really open to ideas. We've proven that on so many issues, all the way from a bottle bill to a beach bill to assisted suicide, you name it. Mm-hmm. Oregonians are open to new ideas. And in my view, this is a debate that would be listened to carefully and responded to. Oregon is a conservative state when it comes to your money. We are a low-tax state now. And so I think when they look at the options on Social Security, raising taxes, cutting benefits, or increasing yield, they would opt for increasing yield.
Though costs with all of those, including
the
latter. Senator Smith, thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure.
We've just got another minute here. Stephen Hayes, let me turn to you. As you watch what's unfolding here so far this week, what's beginning in the weeks ahead, how's your confidence running? You're a Bush supporter. How are you feeling about the position this campaign is in?
It's an interesting question. Before I went to the Democratic convention, I actually was not optimistic about President Bush's chances. I didn't feel like they were effectively communicating their message. They weren't making their arguments. They were waiting for surrogates to make their arguments on their behalf. I think they're much more engaged now, and perhaps that's just sort of the natural course of things as we move forward in the political season. But it seems like they're eager to make the argument. They're out there. They're addressing, I think, the concerns of the voters more than they were in the past. And I think it's working to their benefit, and it's being reflected in the polls.
Well, a little bump in the polls. You can feel the confidence in the hall tonight. A lot more to go. We will hear it this week. We will hear it in the weeks ahead. Stephen Hayes with the Weekly Standard, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Good to be with you.
And John Harwood with the Wall Street Journal, thanks for joining us here in Madison Square Garden.
You bet.
Great to have you. We will be here every night this week with the Republicans at their convention for coverage of that convention in New York all this week. Go to our website, onpointradio.org. We'll be back tomorrow night. Join us then. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.